Welcome to Story 49 on KNOM Radio. Story 49 is a monthly show featuring the stories of people who live in Alaska. I'm your host, Emily Bennick. This month's featured guest is Nome local Richard Benneville. Richard owns and operates Nome Discovery Tours and is involved in the Nome community in a million different ways. And Richard absolutely, devotedly loves Western Alaska. Richard's retelling of From New York to Nome will be Act 1 of this month's episode. In Act 2, I'm in the KNOM studio with Richard as he delves further into several topics: how Nome has changed over the past 20 years, the mythology surrounding the Seward Peninsula, and he'll give a few words of advice. Please note that this episode contains a discussion of alcohol addiction.
I've been asked to tell my story, and that's you're asking the wrong guy, because I love to tell stories, and I like to tell this story because it has a lot, and it's fun. It's a fun story. When I do my tours, I say, my name is Richard Benville. I've lived in Nome for 26 years, and prior to living in Nome, I lived in Barrow for 7 years, and prior to that, New York City and the theater, the Upper West Side, and a whole nother world. And how an old gypsy from New York ended up in Barrow and hence Nome, Alaska, is kind of a fun one. But I always have to stop for a second before I start telling the story. And especially with this audience on Western Alaska, I know so many people out there and love you all dearly. That's the honest to God truth. And I want to say this first because I am very sensitive to the fact that what may be funny or it might seem humorous in one culture, that does not necessarily mean that the same thing could be funny or humorous in another culture. And one has to be aware of that when one is telling a story. And this story involves, it involves the native people of northern Alaska. And I always start this by also saying that, the Inupiaq people, the people of the far north of Alaska, really saved my life. They really, really did. It was my sojourn. It began with my sojourn up in Barrow where, and I couldn't say anything specific. All I can say, there was a feel that ultimately, and when you hear my story, you'll see why this was so critical, that allowed me to see myself as I was, am. That allowed me, got my brain, which is a little iffy sometimes, to think about my problem. And my problem was alcohol. I drank. And then the story is about drinking a career away, in any case. And it allowed me ultimately to sober up. And for that, I have this very deep debt, I feel. This part of the world allowed me to see myself as I was. And once I was able to see that, and I sobered up with AA, God bless it, one day at a time, hello Central. So I want to tell this story because it is cool. The story in no way demeans the people of Barrow or the far north, because I love you all and you literally saved my life. I was born back east, Mountain Lakes, New Jersey. My father was the only dentist. When I was about 8 years old, he was drafted into the Air Force. I grew up in the Air Force, living all over the world, perhaps one of the most wonderful things that ever happened to me. I was an Air Force brat, a military brat, and I say that with great pride. As a kid, we lived in Japan and lived out on the economy. So I was 9 to 13 or something. I grew up living on the economy in Japan in 1955 to 58 or almost to 59. Graduated from high school in Europe. Came back to the U.S., did a couple of years of college, didn't finish. But my ambition all my life has been the theater. I'm an actor, a singer, a dancer. I wanted to do it since I was 6 years old. I started tap dancing. I loved the old music. My grandmother loved the old Irish song. So I just loved it. And that's where I wanted to do. And after a couple of years of very unsuccessful grades in university, but wonderful theatrical experiences, I picked up my little knapsack and off I went to New York City to seek my fortune. God had blessed me with talent. can't change the oil in my car. There are more things I can't do than I can, but there are a few things I can do. And I learned to hone those talents, my acting, my singing, my dancing. So that by the time I got to New York, I was a hot little, you know, little dude, you know, blue-eyed and tap danced like a fool. But great big high tenor voice and loved it. And I was motivated. So when opportunities came along, I was able to do it. And before too long, I got my equity card, was professional, and was cast to understudy Joel Grey in Cabaret. Vieux comme un bienvenu, welcome. I was in Fiddler on the Roof twice in New York as the Fiddler. Did a lot of flops, off-Broadway, summer stock, dinner theater, you name it. I was traveling on the road all the time, bus and truck tours. Did one tour of Cabaret or Funny Girl, I can't remember which it was. 18 months around the country on a bus, doing one-night stands and what they called split weeks. And that was almost like doing vaudeville, you know, 100 years ago. And I did very well. I was on the top of my game. I was where I wanted to be. I had the respect of peers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I had a problem. And that problem was drinking, which was something, maybe the only bad thing I learned in the Air Force. And my parents were of a generation that drank cocktails every evening, and I'd fix the cocktails. And before too long, I was tasting the cocktails and then making the cocktails. And as I made them, I drank them. So this taste for alcohol just got worse and worse and worse and got in the way of the theater. And the phone that had never stopped ringing, with rarely auditioning, an expression, the whole thing went to hell in a handcar, and the phone stopped ringing. I was unemployable. I could dance and all of that, but I was much more interested in where my next drink was coming from. I'd show up late, didn't show up at all sometimes. And in my business, in that business, you can't do that. In any case, in the spiraling down of about 4 years, and next thing now comes the amazing part to me. I'm on the bottom. I had an extension cord stretched from one apartment to my apartment to a friend's apartment to keep the electricity on. Eviction notices on the door. I mean, it was like, you know, Arthur Miller. It was really hard. And then my friends and family did an intervention. The next thing I know, I'm on an airplane with a one-way ticket to Anchorage, Alaska, to visit my brother Bert, who at the time ran Merrill Lynch's operation, the brokerage house. This is like now we're coming up on December of 1981, coming up on 82. As I look back on it, you know, and I was out of my element. I was in a place where I just had no idea. I was a fish out of water, to use an expression, and a raging alcoholic. And not much good to anybody, most especially myself. My brother, who is a wonderful guy, God, I love, he was such a cool guy, my brother Bert. Anyway, so Bert hooked me up with an interview with a guy named Alan Gallant. And Alan Gallant at the time was then president of Alaska Commercial Company. We have them all over Alaska, off-the-road systems, grocery/department stores. So Alan, as it turns out, was from New York, and he was Jewish. I mean, I could talk to the guy. You know, we had that, he had that way, and I had that way, and the end of our little meeting, he looked at me and he looked at me again and he said, you know, Benfield, I like your style. He says, we got an opening in Point Barrow or an opening in Cordova. And I remember thinking to myself like it was yesterday, my God, I've come this far north to go south to some place that sounded vaguely Mexican, Cordova. I'm going to Barrow. So I got on an airplane, a Wien Air Alaska jet, and I arrived in Barrow the 1st of February, 1982, 11 o'clock in the morning, the middle of the night, 40 degrees below zero, remember those days, 40 degrees below zero, and the snow was blowing up. There I stood at the top of that Wien Air Alaska jet with my camel hair wrap-around coat, my three-piece suit, a tie, and a fedora like Indiana Jones. As I looked at the terminal, the fine Eskimo people of Barrow were wiping the steam off the window, looking out at me as if to say, what in the name of heaven is that? I had been hired to manage the stereo and furniture department at AC, called Storkpuck up there. So I went to work for AC. One day in April, I'm selling something to a marvelous old Eskimo couple, Thomas and Myrtle Akuchuk. And as I'm selling the item, my grandmother's words of when I was a little boy, and I'd talk back to her. She was a sweet lady, but I'd just give her a hard time. And she'd look at me in her Irish way, and she'd wag her finger, and she'd go, "You know, Dick, one of these days with your mouth, you're going to end up selling freezers to the Eskimos." And that's exactly what I was selling Thomas and Myrtle. 1,000 miles from the North Pole, my life had changed. I'm standing there selling this 15-foot chest freezer. It was like my grandmother was in my brain. Myrtle invited me over for tea, and I'm having tea with them in their house in Barrow. We're sitting around the kitchen table, and she looked at me, and several years later, she said, "Richard, do you remember that first day we met?" I said, "Oh, Myrtle, like it was yesterday. Yes, I do remember it very, very well." She said, "Yeah." She said, "Thomas here. Thomas thought he poked me in my side, and in Eskimo, he said to me, 'Myrtle, that white man's crazy, man. He's laughing and crying at the same time,' because I saw my life in front of me." It was that moment that, you know, I was like Alice with the Looking Glass. I realized I wasn't in Kansas anymore. My life had changed. Where my life was had changed. And I kind of shut the book on New York. And I began my now 30-plus years of a sojourn here in northern Alaska. I moved to Nome because of the roads. I'm not Mr. Snow Machine. If you know me, you know that. I'm not Mr. Four Wheeler. I'm not Mr. I'm just not. I'm Mr. Van. Nice heater. I couldn't enjoy the outside of town in Barrow because there are not many roads. But here I can travel the roads, which I do with my tour company, and go out and show people this fabulous part of the world. And when I can, on occasion, introduce them to the wonderful people from here.
This month's episode of Story 49 features Richard Benneville of Nome, Alaska. Act 2, Richard in the Studio. So, Richard, can you just tell me how Nome has changed since you've lived here?
The biggest change in Nome hasn't been a change in Nome at all. It's been a change in me. 21 years ago, I stopped drinking. You know, you look at the world one way when you're drinking, it's a whole different world when you're not drinking. The last years of my drinking experience were scrambling to get that next drink. Alcoholics don't really need an excuse to drink. It's raining out, I'll have a drink. It's sunny out, I'll have a drink. I'm getting divorced, I'll have a drink. I'm getting divorced, I'll have a drink. You know, it doesn't make any difference. But there's when you're deeply abusing alcohol as I did, and I don't know how I got as far as I did, it's panic. It's a sense of panic. It's you lose. You're always scrambling to keep a face. I think of some of my friends here in Nome. And I learned, in AA, and that was the way I did it. I did Schicksal, which was a physical aversion therapy thing. And it worked in that I can't stand the smell of scotch anymore. But once I discovered, I moved down from Barrow, and once I discovered beer, I thought, well, it's not hard liquor. I can drink beer. And within 2 weeks, I was drinking a case or a case and a half a day. I was closing the bar every night and being at work. This is when AC was down on Front Street a long time ago. But there's this sense of panic and getting up in the morning. It was a lot of work. People don't trust you. A lot of really subtle things were not there that had been there that I lost because of the drinking. Sobering up, and let's talk about the good news. Oh, my friend Arnie A. would say, to live in the past is to live in anger. To live in the future is to live in fear. Alcoholics do this all the time. We're ticked off about what we didn't do. So we have a drink. And we're afraid of tomorrow, so we have another drink. What you have is today. One day at a time. That's a really loaded expression. And that's why I sobered up was AA. And I'm a big proponent of it. 21 years later. What was it like? What is the difference? You gain back trust. You gain back people's love. You're able to do things you couldn't do anymore. Not only that, just because you physically couldn't do them, but because you care. You didn't care so much before. I'm living my day because the bar opens at 5, or that's when I get off work, and I'm there going to be there at 5. And that's that evening. And then I just got to figure out how do I get through tomorrow until 5 o'clock. And that, sometimes just very consciously was the thought, how can I get from here to there? How can I get to my next drink? And that is a terrible, terrible way to live. It's living panic. I think gaining back trust was such an amazing thing. And so many families have been ruined by it. And, the alcoholic, they have a thing called Al-Anon, and it's so powerful. The alcoholic doesn't know what havoc he, she wreaks. But we do. I did. And that's it affects so many people in so many different ways. And people want that trust of their family back, the love of their kids back, the love of whatever back. Well, one of the ways is if you're a problem drinker is maybe consider stop drinking. I have also found that most alcoholics are very much aware of the fact that they are, or they're getting close or whatever. I don't really know that many who were just totally oblivious to the fact that they weren't. They either did it because they wanted to do it, end of story, or I can't do anything else because this is wrong. I used to whine about missing New York, and my good friend Elise Petkutuk up at Barrow, one time because I was always whining about why our relationship didn't work, and she just stopped one day and just looked at me and she said, "What the heck do you think these people in New York are doing? Getting up every morning, putting their feet on the ground, and the first thing they think about is how am I going to make Richard Benville's life difficult in Barrow, Alaska? What kind of an ego do you have, Richard?" Well, she's very, very right. But we as alcoholics, we tend to whine a lot. They call it sniveling in AA, and a snivel. Snivel's not good. But it's very real. And I can tell you the freedom. I'm not rich, but if I really needed to go to Anchorage for a weekend, I could do that. When I was drinking, it was all going to booze. All the money. Rent, I'll take care of it later. I'm going to write a bad check tonight at the bar. So yeah, it's not a nice way. It's not a fun way to live at all. And then if someone's out there suffering, think about AA. Give somebody a call. Share it with them. Let them go ahead. It's okay. Was it Norman Vaughn? Great Alaskan. Don't be afraid to fail. At least you tried. Hello Central. That's a powerful stuff. So having said that, the biggest changes in Nome, well, there are some physical changes. The weather. 25 years ago, 1989, my first winter in Nome, 54 below. 54 below with piles of snow on the street corners. I remember having a New Year's Eve party, and I would build little candle holders into the snowbank, which was over my head. You look at the old pictures of Nome. Before me, 100 years ago, during the gold rush, the snow is up to the eaves of the buildings. There was a lot more snow. The weather has dictated a lot of changes. It's changing our economy. It's changing things that are difficult to kind of even understand. And that is weather patterns change. Weather patterns and rain and moisture affect when berries, ripen and when the fish come back and all of those different things. So it's had a huge slow, but an impact here on life in Western Alaska. The second gold rush has been a huge change. that's just been, from my point of view as a tour guide, I kind of sit back and watch, because in a way I'm watching what happened 110 years ago. A good friend of mine who's a beach miner, small dredge, independent dredge miner, Bob Hafner, was asked in an interview once on film. He said, Bob, what's the difference between you and a gold miner 100 years ago? And he thought for a second. He said, a cell phone. There's not a lot of difference. Same mistakes that people made 100 years ago, they're making now. But with a high price of gold, the reality shows count them too. You know, it's been huge. And a moment on that. I'm a showbiz guy, so, you know, publicity, and I'm in the tourism business, so I'm very proud of our area and our roads and our economy can use tourism. Our cruise ships, our independents, our birders, all of those people, we can use that income. It also allows people to learn about what we really are. And you may say, well, what difference, they go away, how does that have any effect? Well, they go back and vote. And if they've had a good experience and they know the situation up here and they see for themselves, you know, and through my eyes by telling them or whoever, and they see these great changes, then that might change how they vote about things. And that is important. Then you start talking, because the world is changing. And climate change is bringing tremendous change to our region. Not all viewed as good by all. Transportation to the Bering Strait. Transportation into our harbor. So there's a huge change. You know, we've got good, we're well represented. We're extremely well thought of in the state, outside of our area. We're on the edge, and everybody in the state knows we are. We have, you know, there's this whole thing with the two Alaskas, and they're becoming over, you know, I think of our mayor. You know, Denise has done a great job with, you know, presenting Nome and keeping us involved in those things at the far north and the Arctic Council and the North Council of the North and all of those things, that keeping Alaska in the forefront, because we're the Arctic nation of the United States of America. As a result, not just for the state of Alaska, but for our country, there are tremendous changes happening. We need to be a part of it. The people, that's what I talk about at NACTEC. When I go out and talk to the kids from the villages, I say, that's your legacy. You don't have to go out and be an activist, but you really need to know what's going on. Your voice is important. I also tell them, what's wrong with me in tourism? Well, nothing. My mother loved it, and I love it too. It's great, and I tell a good story. But the problem is, I'm not telling my story. I'm telling your story very often. And that's kind of bogus. How much more powerful it would be. I think of Norbert, God rest his soul, Kokarik, and Auntie Sarah up in Teller, and how simply he would say something, and the five or six people that were sitting around his table that would hear him say it, their eyes would just stop, and their minds would, because he'd say something simply but profound. Profound. I had a lady once. We were driving back into town from Teller, and she had made a big mistake that a lot of tourists do on occasion. I'm not being critical of tourism, but sometimes, you know, this is why we do it. She had raised the muskox to a level of almost godlike, you know, things from Ohio or someplace. And we were all driving up to Teller, and I was telling her the story of the road and Bob Blodgett and all of the Teller and size and blah, 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 and the birds and flowers and tundra and Cape Woolley, all of those things, emphasizing that, you know, that they're going to meet Sarah Norbert. So sure enough, we went into the house and we're sitting having tea and we're sitting around, and Norbert, you know, talking about bears and Mary's Igloo and all of that. And the lady is talking to Sarah. And she's going, oh, Sarah, how wonderful it must be to live amongst this wonderful animal, this pristine, magnificent animal that is the evocation of wild, that is the... she was passionate about muskox. And Sarah got quiet for a second, and she looked at her, and she kind of squinted her eyes, and she said, well, you know, they don't make very good neighbors. And I about lost it. She said, yeah. She said, you know, it's up in here in Teller, they trample down the berries and they make everything all messy. The bears are chasing them into the village, you know. She said, I'm not so sure that they make good neighbors. So hour and a half later, we after walking around, we're driving back in North Nome, and this lady that had been so effusive had been very quiet. And she said to me, ultimately, she was sitting in the passenger seat, she said, "Richard," she said, "thank you." And I said, "For what?" And she said, "Well, you gave me the kick in the butt," or actually, Sarah gave me the kick in the butt that I think I really needed. And I knew exactly what she meant. And that's sort of what people, they make a stereotype idea, they have this feeling about something, but when they go there, they learn something very different. And their experience oftentimes just affects them in their heart. You can see it. Anyway, I do go on. I'm enjoying being older. I've had excellent role models. My grandmother, who saw so many things so long before I not even considered them before, certainly before I ever experienced them. But and I learned, I think, again from my dear friend Norbert and other elders up in Barrow and here of just, you know, learning to listen. And I'm thankful for that. And people think, no, you don't listen, Richard. You still talk. I do talk a lot. But I've learned to listen. I've learned to be patient, far more patient than an old New York gypsy than I ever was. This growing older is wonderful. People shouldn't, you know, fear it. You need to embrace it. The older you get, the better you look at things. You kind of take yourself out of yourself and look at things because it's just the way God made it. And that's very cool. Very, very cool. I think of elders that whose voices I can hear when I shut my eyes. Job Kukachurik, who passed a number of years ago. But you could hear his voice. This beautiful, deep, modulated voice that would just talk about growing up Cape Darby. And anyway, I'm a very lucky guy.
Thank you to Richard Benneville for sharing his personal life story and reflections on Nome. Story 49 is a production of KNOM Radio Mission. The music for this episode was provided by Jackson Smith, Caligny, Scott Joplin, The Black Twig Pickers, Reverend Gary Davis, and Mystery Mammal. If you would like to participate in Story 49, call KNOM at 907-443-5221 or email story49@knom.org. Story 49, sharing your voice, your story, your Alaska.